Will OPEC roll back the barrel?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. When recession hits and people stop demanding so much foreign oil and other imports, at least trade deficits fall. The Commerce Department said this morning the U.S. trade imbalance hit a six-year low in January. A lot of people are wondering how low oil demand can go, including the OPEC ministers meeting this Sunday in Vienna. That is where Carola Hoyos is. She's chief energy correspondent for the Financial Times. Carola, some OPEC members have called for yet another production cut. What are the odds that'll happen?
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, whose trains move
long time, and this may be one of the first meetings where I just don't even have a clue. They're definitely not going to boost production, but it depends whether they see the glass half empty or the glass half full.
Well, let's start with the glass half empty. We hear a lot about demand having dropped. The recession seems to be deepening. Why wouldn't the ministers cut production?
Well, one of the main reasons they wouldn't is that we've actually seen oil prices level off somewhat. We're back to kind of $47 a barrel, so that's a good thing for them. Not great. They want them to be higher. And Saudi Arabia is saying, look, boys, until you guys comply better, we shouldn't make any more cuts. And ironically, those countries that are not complying are arguing the opposite. They say that the OPEC cartel as a whole should make more cuts rather than harping on the compliance issue. And there I single out Venezuela in this case.
So for those of us who might be affected by all of this, how directly would a production cut translate to higher energy prices?
It can result quite quickly in a change in petrol pump prices. But I think the overarching thing that not only we should think about, but OPEC is clearly also going to be thinking about, is that if they become too successful in cutting oil production, if they cut too much, they may well end up hurting the economy more. And that's not only bad for you and me, but it's also bad for OPEC, because if the economy goes even further into a tailspin, it'll be using less crude oil.
Carola Hoyos of the Financial Times, thank you.
Thanks.
The Dow is off 37 points at this hour, 0.5% at 7,132. The Nasdaq down 15 points or 1%, and the S&P 500 is down 5 points. That's 0.75%. Asian markets, though, jumped 4 to 5% today. Major European markets ended up about 1%. If you feel angry about corporate execs making big money in bad times, hear this. Today's Wall Street Journal reports that New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo and congressional Democrats are pushing for new rules that link executive pay not to quick profits, but to long-term results. Here's Ashley Milne-Tite.
Short-term thinking has fueled Wall Street pay for years. Bonuses are doled out every year, and executives are offered huge pay packages when they sign on. Paul Hodgson of the Corporate Library says it's high time the emphasis switched to rewarding executives for long-term performance.
It's a setup that's been adopted elsewhere in the economy, in fact, where you might promise a cash incentive or a stock incentive, but you don't deliver it until that performance has been achieved over 3, 4, or 5 years.
But some are worried about the government having a hand in that kind of shift. Charles Elson directs the Weinberg Center for Corporate Governance at the University of Delaware.
Every time the government has gotten itself into the compensation business, they've managed to make a bad situation an awful lot worse.
Elson says he supports pay being tied to long-term company performance, but he says boards of directors should make those rules. Otherwise, he says, shareholders will lose out. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 423 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce emissions. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Fox TV's American Idol has wrapped up its first week. Ratings are still strong this year, but they have slipped a little in the 12 to 34 demographic. Michael Speier is executive editor of Variety. Michael, how come Idol is fading a little bit with the youths?
Probably the mojo's probably gone. It was such at a high point, unlike any show we've seen in the past few years, that it really had nowhere to go but down. And that said, it's going down a little bit here and there. And that's why they brought in some changes. But overall, it's still a network problem that most people would love to have.
Well, speaking of changes, there's this new rule that the judges can save a contestant that the audience has eliminated?
Right. All these kind of weird tweaks that actually American Idol has been criticized over the years for not making changes and being kind of stolid in their decision to keep three judges and the same kind of voting and all of that. So this time they brought in another judge. They have new voting techniques. It's not really helping much. I think in the end, it really is all about the contestants. If you have someone like Kelly Clarkson, someone who kind of breaks out, you're going to have something big. If you're going to have someone like a Taylor Hicks who, you know, in the moment people like, but after that doesn't have much of a career, then you're going to have a show that probably dips a little bit.
I don't think you heard me, Michael. Saving contestants that the audience has eliminated. Where is the outrage? Some contestants need to fail. They're nationalizing American Idol.
Yes, they are.
This is network socialism, my friend.
But in the end, they probably have a better take on what sells than we do. And if there's a contestant that the fans are voting off, but they want to keep them, they're going to find a way to bring them back.
So if Idol is fading a little bit, who's taking advantage of the opening?
Other reality shows, really. Something like Dancing with the Stars, something like The Biggest Loser. Those are shows that were popular on their own first. The Biggest Loser just keeps growing and growing. Dancing with the Stars just premiered to huge numbers. Those are almost kind of like Idol numbers, the way Idol, not quite, but almost. And so those are the kind of shows that are hitting their peak, just like American Idol hit their peak.
We're in pilot season now. Reality is ruling. How's that affecting pilot season?
Well, as always, when there's fewer hours for scripted programming, there's going to be fewer programs ordered, and that's exactly what's happening. Pilot season, the ordering of pilots is going on right now, but you see networks ordering fewer because all of these reality shows, even Jay Leno, who's not a reality show but a talk show, all of these shows mean fewer slots in the schedule for regular scripted programming. When that happens, they order fewer pilots, less people get hired, and they have to find other ways to get jobs.
Bad news for writers, good news for anonymous, about-to-be-famous people.
Exactly.
Variety's Michael Spire. Thanks.
Pleasure.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. The Dow is down 35 points now at 7,134. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great Friday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.